are Locked On Packers.
I feel like we can run the table.
Your daily Green Bay Packers podcast.
Rodgers gets out.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Floats it.
Your team.
Cobb.
Every day.
Touchdown.
You are Locked On Packers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day. I'm Peter Bukowski, going to cover the Packers for The Leap, a newsletter I would love for you to subscribe to. You can follow me on Twitter, Peter_Bukowski. Follow the podcast on Twitter at Locked On Packers. Like us on Facebook. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, on Spotify, on Google Podcasts. Wherever you find podcasts, you will find Locked On Packers, the number one Packers podcast on the internet. And the show for fans who know what happened. They want to know why and how. Today on the show, Lily Zhao is here. Zhao, you doing in the building? The Packers are the number one seed in the NFC, but this special teams question could sink Green Bay. It could sink Matt LaFleur's Coach of the Year candidacy, and it could ultimately sink their Super Bowl hopes. On the other hand, it may not matter. It may not matter. Let me take you back to 2010. In 2010, the Packers rode a balanced team that was banged up, that had a terrific quarterback, a diverse group of skill players on offense. This version of the Packers, the 2021 Packers, runs the ball much better. But Charles Woodson, not on this team. Clay Matthews, not on this team. That team in the postseason did not rely on special teams to win and lose football games. They didn't need a game-deciding kick. They didn't need the field position game to win them or lose them football games. That team, don't forget, that team, 26th in DVOA in 2010 on special teams. Think of the regular season game against the Atlanta Falcons. That was a back-and-forth contest. Green Bay, they score late in the first half. And what happens? They give up a long kickoff return to set with a field goal to set the Falcons up in scoring position. Green Bay loses that game. Now they get the Falcons back. Why? Because Aaron Rodgers is fully in fuego and destroys the Falcons in a way that we have never seen them be destroyed before or since. And that team in the postseason didn't need their special teams to come through for them. Now, I think you could make the case the last two seasons when the special teams has been anything but sterling. The Packers, they didn't really need their special teams to be great against Seattle because the offense was really good and the defense closed the door. Wouldn't have mattered if the special teams were any better against San Francisco because they were just going to get their asses kicked running the ball. That was just the reality. And last year, I think you could make the case here or there, 5 yards, 10 yards, some field position could have made the difference in that game, but there were also multiple turnovers in their own territory. Rodgers throws a pick on his side of the field. Aaron Jones fumbles on the Packers' side of the ball. There's the Kevin King play. That's not special teams. And they were 25th in DVOA last year with a worse defense, by the way, than Green Bay has this season. So what is a potential catastrophic event? And look, Mason Crosby, it could come down to a field goal and he might have to kick one. Last time that happened in a big spot in the postseason, 2016, he made one of the most clutch kicks in Packers playoff history. In fact, two of them, one, or they were in back-to-back possessions, basically. After the Jared Cook play, people forget there was one actually before that, that the Cowboys went out and matched and Green Bay had to rematch. The Packers, though, they're not just bad on special teams. They're last, and last in like every category. The only one they're not last in is punting. And that's because Corey Bojorquez has been so good, but they give up the first punt return all season last week to the Bears. Go back to 2010. Packers Patriots, Matt Flynn puts together a game effort against Tom Brady and the hegemonic Patriots in New England. And it is a Dan Connolly kickoff return that seals that game for New England, basically. And you're just going, you have got to be effing kidding me. That was the reaction of every Packer fan watching that game. How could this happen? Now, you could also see 2014, where in a game where you need 100 things to go wrong, 105 things go wrong, and 100 of them are special teams. You have a field goal that turns into a touchdown on a fake field goal. You have a miscue on your hands team that turns into an onside kick recovery that costs you the game, that costs you the chance to go win a Super Bowl, to go play a team you'd already beaten. I don't need to open up the wounds of 2014 again, but we know special teams can cost you in the postseason. That being said, it could also cost the Packers in the regular season because they're playing a team this week. This has been the best special teams in the league since John Harbaugh has been there. Justin Tucker, they don't make those mistakes. They're well coached. They're going to see teams, the Packers are in the playoffs. It closes down that margin. Here's the other side of that. What Matt LaFleur has done this season, offensively, patchwork offensive line, injuries, COVID, offseason drama, and still built a top five offense by any metric you want to use. That is incredible coaching. The game planning and the design of these plays and the design of the offense and the intent and the decision making is consistently on point. He brought in Joe Barry, a highly criticized move by most people. I admit it was not the most inspiring decision to me. I did not think it could go this well with Joe Barry. He has exceeded my expectations so far that I still don't think that I have fully come to grips with understanding the impact of this coaching staff on the defense, especially on the defensive side with the injuries. And for better or for worse, that's part of what's happening in the Coach of the Year race, right? And if the Packers win the Super Bowl, no one's going to care about Coach of the Year. That's not what this is about. The job that Matt LaFleur has done to keep this team together, to win a game where you have a historically bad performance on special teams, is meaningful against a rival in prime time, where you fall down early, where you go down double digits in the first half because you can't tackle anybody. You still come out on top and you win a game like Thursday night against Atlanta. And you win a game against the Rams when they are a star-driven team. And three of your five biggest stars are out. And you handle that Rams team. That is where the Coach of the Year part of this comes in. And that is where you feel like you can give credit to him and predictively believe that it won't matter in the postseason. Now, again, the margin shrinks down in the playoffs. But this team is so balanced right now, offensively and defensively. You start to get a little healthy. You get David Bakhtiari back. You get Jair Alexander back. Maybe you get Za'Darius Smith back. Now you have those star players, and then you have the infrastructure, and you have the coaching. I made the case yesterday. This team is built to withstand the issues better than teams in the past because of all of these things, all these factors, deeper roster, better coaching, all that stuff. More malleable. When you get into the postseason, you need that part of it. And what you want if you're the Packers is you want to ensure that your games are won or lost based on the two facets at which you are best. Subvert the impact of special teams as much as possible. That means don't be in a position to have to kick field goals. Don't rely on Mason Crosby to have to win these games. That is offensive efficiency. Well, okay, great. The Packers are number two in offensive DVOA this season. They're the number one EPA team in the league when Aaron Rodgers plays. Their offense is built to score. And they have had some issues, yes, in the red zone. They're coming out of those issues to some degree. But play to play, this is one of the best offenses in the league. And defensively, you win field position battles by getting stops in opponent territory. Don't let them drive past the 50-yard line. Green Bay is getting turnovers. They're getting negatives. They're not giving up explosive plays at high rates. They might give up one or two a game. They gave up two against the Bears. They gave up two against the Rams. They gave up probably more than two. They probably gave up four or five against the Vikings. That's too many. You can give up two. With Aaron Rodgers, Devontae Adams, Aaron Jones, you can give up two. You can't give up four or five. They gave up four or five against the Bucs in the playoffs last year. And then they turned the ball over. Can't do that. So again, it closes down the margin for error, but this team can do it, much like that 2010 team did. Now, it took a Tremont Williams interception in the end zone to beat the Eagles. It took a Caleb Haney pick six to B.J. Raji to beat the Bears. It took a Jared Bush pass breakup on fourth down with Charles Woodson's arm in a sling and Donald Driver hurt to beat the Steelers in the Super Bowl. You have to get a little lucky too. But this team is set up to do it. And that's a credit to Brian Gutekunst, but it is also a credit to Matt LaFleur. Matt LaFleur, I said this on Twitter yesterday. I believe if Bill Belichick leads the Patriots to the one seed, he's the coach of, he deserves to be coach of the year. I also believe if Matt LaFleur takes the Packers to the one seed, he deserves to be coach of the year. How do you weigh that? I think in that case, Matt LaFleur is a shade behind Bill Belichick. Rookie quarterback, all the new pieces, and also because Bill Belichick, I think, gets some credit, fair or not, for the team that he put together. He is also the GM of this team, and for them to come back to win what is a jumbled AFC, but still, if they're the number one seed, it will be almost solely because of this coaching staff. The Packers have a coach that they have to believe in, that we have to believe in, can elevate them. Now, it is also part of his responsibility to fix whatever is going on with the special teams. This is something that someone like Mike Tomlin is famous for doing. If the offense is struggling, he spends a little bit more time in the offensive meeting rooms that week or that couple weeks. If the defense is struggling, he spends a little bit more time in the meeting rooms with the defense that week. If the special teams is struggling, you get the idea. Now, do you want Matt LaFleur, the designer, creator, play caller of this offense, to be spending more time in Mo Drayton's rooms? Probably not. But at the same time, this is something that affects football games. They call it three phases and three equal phases. It's not. It's just not. I mean, you might have 10, 12 special teams plays in a game. You have 50, 60 offensive defensive plays. So it's not the same. And if you don't kick field goals, you only have extra points. Kickoffs. Every punt return you could fair catch, but you still got to catch them. Amari Rodgers doesn't seem to get that. There are ways here, strategies to mitigate the impact on the game. It's going to take coaching on offense and defense to do it. It's going to take really high-level play to do it. But the Packers have proven you can have a bad special teams group, a team that your special teams costs you wins in the regular season and have it not matter in the playoffs. They've also shown that the reverse is true. You can have a bad special teams and it absolutely costs you in the playoffs. It's going to be up to Matt LaFleur and this coaching staff. If he's going to be coach of the year, special teams cannot be the thing that sinks this team in the playoffs. And speaking of the playoffs, speaking of Super Bowl aspirations, Super Bowl 56 at SoFi is less than 100 days away. And On Location, the official hospitality partner of the NFL, is the only place to score a once-in-a-lifetime Super Bowl ticket and experience package. Don't you want to be in LA in February? I don't know where you are, but in February, it's probably going to be cold. And even if it's not, even if you live somewhere warm, God bless you, Wouldn't you rather be in LA cheering on the Packers in the Super Bowl? On Location can get you there. Select your exact seats and choose from elite experiences featuring an exclusive pregame celebration with NFL legends, five-star LA hotels, and food by the great Wolfgang Puck. Visit onlocationexp.com/SB56 for more information or search Super Bowl On Location. That's onlocationexp.com/SB56 or search Super Bowl On Location. Today's episode is also brought to you by our friends at Stance. And I understand why some people don't like socks as a gift. I love them. I love socks. I have a bunch of them, not just crazy pattern dress socks. I love comfy socks. It is hard to find comfy socks that you also feel good wearing, that also reflect your personality. That's where Stance comes in. Founded in 2009, Stance Apparel represents a radical reinvention of socks, underwear, and active apparel with a sharp focus on comfort, quality, and creativity. That's the key. Stance brings an atypical aesthetic alongside some of pop culture's hottest collaborators for the ultimate in style and self-expression, because everyone and everything you wear should be a direct extension of who you are and how you feel. I was just on the site and I was looking at some of the different options right now for the holidays. They've got Grinch socks. They've got Christmas Vacation socks. We're talking about not just cartoons, Batman, Goonies, Star Wars, Harry Potter, Marvel, Bob Marley, NBA, all kinds of options. And the material is quality. That's the thing. They're comfortable. Some you might go to a store and buy novelty socks and know I can only wear these three times. That's not the deal with Stance. They invest in quality materials to give you comfort and that fun and creativity this holiday season. Stance believe that the perfect fit matters more than fitting in, and that those who feel good do good. So go see for yourself and register for an account at stance.com and get 15% off your first purchase when you use the promo code LOCKEDON at checkout. Enjoy the color and comfort of a less ordinary life with Stance. Just like the Green Bay Packers, she is the number one seed. Lily Zhao from Fox 6 joins us now on a 2-game win streak. Zhao, you doing back for another one? Lily, Zhao, you doing?
Peter, doing great. You know, we're nearing the end of the holiday season, so that makes me sad. But there's a lot of fun stuff to look forward to, including Packers football. So, and chatting with you every week. So I'm doing great. Zhao, you doing?
I'm good. We still have, don't shortchange the holidays. We've got plenty of time left. There's still plenty of football left. And the good thing this year, with the only thing really that's good about the extra game, is that we get more football. That's it. Longer football. But the Packers, as I mentioned, in very good position to be the one seed, as they are set, I think, now to be favored in every game the rest of the way. What do you think the chances are that they do in fact win out and become the number one seed?
Again, if they play like the Packers that we know they are, they should be able to go 4-0. However, if they have a game where they start out slow and just crazy things happen, I could see them dropping one. But if they come in focused each and every week, they should be fine. I mean, you know, the toughest test will be Lamar Jackson and those Ravens. If Lamar is in that game, you know, it's on the road, hostile environment. It got pushed back time wise. So I think that'll be a tricky game for them. But if they can weather that storm, I think they're going to be pretty good for the last three opponents. I think they would like some revenge on the Vikings, even though they don't do revenge things. But
they say.
But I feel like they should be in good shape to sweep if they can just keep their heads in it, which we know they will, because it's time to shine right now, as the playoffs are kind of right there.
You know, it's interesting. So a year ago, or maybe even before this season, especially after week one, you'd go, yeah, there's a chance that they just might no show one of these games, that they might just not have the juice, right? Drink. And we saw that in 2019. We saw it in 2020. Outside of the always weird week one, we haven't seen them fully just like check out for a game. They've lost some games. But for example, the Vikings game, they started slowly in that game, but then they were electric. They fought back after that slow start. Do you think we have more evidence now this season that they could overcome a, okay, we're just a little lethargic and they start slowly and now all of a sudden they have this run in them to get back in it?
I certainly think so. And I think that Bears game was very evident. You know, that first quarter was snooze fest. And then the second quarter was just, you know, like, what is happening? However, in that game, in that first half, it kind of took everything kind of on your crazy bingo sheet for the Bears to be where they were leading at halftime. And this Packers team, you know, we saw that quote from Preston Smith saying, we don't lose at home. We, you know, we have not played our best football in the first half. Let's get it going. You saw from there and they went on to win. So I do feel like, and again, with the quality of competition, it's not like they're facing Tom Brady. It's not like they're facing, you know, another elite quarterback where if they're down there, it might be very hard to come back. But when you look at the four opponents left, even if they do start out slow, I do feel like they're able to get their feet under them and, you know, kind of come back if need be, because they've shown their mettle. They've shown their mettle for sure.
They might have to play Tom Brady in the playoffs. So none of that shenanigans in the postseason, but you're right. I think these last four games, you know, like the Browns are not going to jump out to some 21-0 lead that becomes insurmountable. It's just not who they are. So, and the Vikings, no one loves to try and give away games like the Vikings. I mean, it is one of their few elite traits here. I'm interested in how you see this backfield, because it didn't feel like it. I went back and looked at the numbers and I saw that AJ Dillon had twice as many carries as Aaron Jones, but it didn't feel that way. It felt like Aaron Jones was still very much a part of the game, part of the game plan. Do you think what we saw on Sunday is how this is going to continue to shake out, where AJ Dillon is sort of the primary runner, but Aaron Jones is still a featured weapon in this offense?
Yeah, I think that's a really good point that you made there, because, you know, I did read that Jones was a little bit nicked up in the second half, which is why he wasn't out there as much as we would expect him to. However, when you start out that third quarter with that drive that they had on that Aaron Jones score, he's still there. He's still a very potent part of this offense. So again, when the weather gets colder and you want the ground and pound, you want to wear these teams out, AJ's your guy. And then you bring in Aaron Jones, you get the electric plays, you get the passing game going with him, you get the misdirection. I mean, that's where those guys really can be used so well, is that you have these two versatile backs. And granted, AJ Dillon's done very well the passing game as well, but you have that like thunder and lightning duo that we've talked about. But I think LaFleur is really using that to their advantage in terms of their roles as like ground and pound versus Aaron Jones is going to run around you and he's going to get a touchdown. So I feel like they were used very well. And again, you know, with Aaron being a little bit nicked up, maybe that would have been different. Maybe his workload might have been a little bit more that second half, but you can't complain when you have two guys like that and the success that they brought to this team.
Yeah, it's a champagne problem for sure for this Packers offense. I've been struck, and we talked about it yesterday, how well that this offensive line has been able to play with all of the injuries. But Billy Turner is a new injury. We'll see what the situation is with that. I mean, how close are they in riding the line between managing and not managing? Because I feel like we might be on the razor's edge here.
Yeah, I feel like if they have one more key injury to anybody on that front five, I mean, it's going to be tough sledding, because these guys have done so well. David's out, Elton goes out, Josh Myers goes out, and now Billy Turner. We don't know the extent of how long he's going to be out. So, you know, they're going to have Ben Braden as a third tackle, and they're going to need him, because it just, again, feels like every week somebody on that line gets nicked up. And the last thing you want is a Lucas Patrick to go down, because, again, there's more reshuffling with everybody there. So it could be that at that time. But again, we saw with that game, you know, they were able to keep things moving even without Billy in the game, even though, you know, Dennis Kelly stepped in really well. So they're going to need him. But again, it's one more injury to that line. And it's like, oh man, who else is next?
Yeah. I don't know what they're going to do if they have another injury. They just are running out of bodies at this point. And it's why David Bakhtiari coming back would be so crucial, because then you get to decide, oh, okay, well, is Yosh Nijman your right tackle then moving forward? Do you want to give him a shot there, a place that he's not really practiced, although all these guys are cross-trained to some degree? If you lose a Lucas Patrick, who plays center? I don't think you have another player on the roster who's taken an NFL snap as a center. So it becomes very difficult to ride that edge defensively. And don't worry, we're going to get to special teams, everyone's favorite topic. Defensively, the Packers did something against the Bears that they have not done this season. They gave up not one, but two big plays. This has not been a defense that has allowed very many at all. Is this a blip? Is this something to be concerned about? Because they did give up a couple to Minnesota as well. So now, you know, a couple times in last week, the Rams got them for a couple. I mean, what are we looking at here?
Well, that's, I feel like a little bit of the Achilles heel for this defense is you can beat them over the top. You can beat them with speed. I mean, it's not like the Packers secondary doesn't have speed, but when you have guys like a Jakeem Grant who are just, I mean, flying, it's hard to catch them. But that kind of has been their issue. It's, you know, if you want to beat them, throw them over the top and have speedy receivers and they can just run it in. Packers can't catch them. And that's kind of been a recipe for success for other teams. So they're going to have to shore that up, especially at that, you know, that nickel spot, because it's, I mean,
yeah,
when you look at the quality of teams that are going to be in the playoffs, they have those elite receivers that can beat the Packers over the top. And you don't want it to be a game like the Bears at second quarter where it's, oh, we've suddenly taken the lead, but well, now they're back down because they just scored on like a 70-yard bomb. I guess when you're looking in terms of that defense, the red zone defense has tightened up so well, but it's just giving up those big plays for touchdowns that's really been hurting them.
It's tough for me because I would sort of rather their red zone defense be good than bank on, you know, if you're an opposing offense, I want you to try and beat us deep. That would be my goal as if I'm a defensive, like, hey, you try it. I dare you. But what's weird is it's not been slow Russell Douglas who's getting beat over the top. It's Chandon Sullivan. It's Eric Stokes who runs 4.28. How do you see Jaire Alexander changing that, if at all, when he comes in? Because he was able to do some work last week. We don't know if he's going to be able to play this week, but it sounds like he's going to get a chance to get out there and get back and try and, you know, get in the mix at least.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be the big question is how do they do that reshuffling? I think Matt LaFleur was asked, you know, could Rasul theoretically be a quote unquote starter? He didn't really give an answer to that as well, because, you know, when you have a guy like Jai, you're not going to bench him, you know, for any reason. So it's going to be very interesting to see what they do. But again, it's have a guy like Stokes, you have Kevin King, you have these guys that are very interchangeable. They can, you know, they can come in and out and play well, whatever. But when you have a guy like Jai back on the field, he's starting, he's going to be playing. It's just who's opposite him and can they keep it up? Because I think what the last thing you want to see is another key injury in that secondary. You're not saying it's going to happen, knock on wood, it's not going to happen. But I guess, again, it's another good problem to have when you got have a guy like Rasul who just played his butt off in terms of, you know, having him in the starting rotation, quote unquote. I think he's earned it. I really do.
I think so too, honestly, but Eric Stokes has also been really good. It's like, how do you find a way to get all these guys on the field at once? The good news is they play their whole lives in nickel basically. And so this is my idea. Tell me what you think about this. So Henry Black has been a problem in coverage. He's a nice special teams player and he's a hitter for someone his size, but Justin Jefferson got him for a touchdown. The Damier Bird touchdown was on him. And he's not gonna be able to cover receivers one-on-one. Why not in nickel play Jaire wherever you want when it's two cornerbacks, but in nickel, put Jaire on the slot when you want to go to that three safety look, instead of putting Henry Black on the field, move Chandon Sullivan to that sort of dime nickel safety. And then play Jaire on the slot. So it's just selectively where you're going to play Alexander in the slot, not like, okay, he's the star now, because I don't think that's workable either.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's where does his skill set really fit with the other guys on the field? It's not like you're going to be like, oh, they're just going to play outside, whatever, they'll be fine. You got to really make it work. So that's a really good point there. But again, it's another good problem to have, right? It's not like we're like, oh my gosh, we're down bodies. These guys are not
right.
Good. It's,
what are they possibly going to do?
Correct. Yeah. You have an all pro guy coming back and it's now moving the other pieces around him to make it the best secondary ever.
It's probably the best secondary that they've had since, I mean,
for
a long time. I mean, since probably Charles Woodson was in the mix, and even that group was only really very good for probably two or three seasons before it started to go off the rails. This special teams group, Lily, can we just have like a moment of silence for the special teams unit? It has been pathetic. It has been pathetic. And there are going to be, I don't even know the best way to describe them, but I suppose they're just always optimistic people. I don't know who these people are, but I see it on Twitter. I've heard it from people like, well, at a certain point, the players have to do the thing. That's to some degree, I agree with that. But what is the balance, do you think, between coaching and players in terms of how much of this is just players not doing what they're supposed to be doing and how much of this is the coaches not putting them in a position to succeed?
Yeah, I think it's kind of equal parts, because when you're looking at the other 31 teams in the NFL, it's, you know, yeah, their special teams might not be fantastic, but they're still not, you know, giving up 97 yard punt returns for touchdowns. It's like, are these guys just not in the right spot? Are they not, you know, blocking well? Or it's like, what is the issue? Because it's, you'd feel like now that we're entering week 15, right? Yeah, week 15. How has it gotten worse? I think that's my question. It's, how has it gotten worse? You know, LaFleur said it's all hands on deck. We might see more veterans on there. And again, you know, it's like, we don't want to see any of those veterans get hurt, God forbid, but it's, you know, maybe it is the scheme of like, it's not registering with guys. But again, at the end of the day, it's like these players have to actually go out there and make the tackles and make the stops. When you have Corey Bohorquez making those tackles, he is the last line of defense, it feels like. And it's, you know, he should not be the one making those tackles. The punt return game, I mean, it's not there at this point. It's don't even catch it.
What punt return game?
Right. It's just like, you know, kick it out of bounds, touchback, and hope for the best, I guess. But I don't know if it's going to get fixed this season.
At a certain point, it's like, just send like Devontae Adams back there to fair catch every pass. Like it, like something like that. Now, not, I don't literally think they should do that. I think like there would be some enterprising team that's like, let's just hit him, take the 15 yard penalty, and it's a free shot on Devontae Adams. Like that, it's not going to work, but something, put Alan Lazard back there, you know, he returned punts at Iowa State. So like, hey, maybe give him a shot to just literally just fair catch everyone. The Packers did that with Charles Woodson back in the day. It was like he was their safety returner. Like when they needed someone to just secure it, it was Charles Woodson. Like go get Charles Woodson now. I would feel better about that.
Yeah, just, I mean, I'll fair catch. No, I'm just kidding. I can't fair catch. Just all these guys running, I'd be like, nah, I'm dropping it. But just, yeah, you're right. Have somebody fair catch it, kick it out of bounds, touchback, something. I mean, it's like the guys just aren't in position to make those tackles, or if they're trying to make tackles, they can't make the tackles. So it's useless either way, I would say.
Especially for a team, this is what I don't get. A team that on defense is so much more disciplined this year and is making tackles effectively this year. How are they so bad on, it's the same. I mean, the same guys are practicing whatever fundamental things that Joe Barry has helped them with. It's the same premise. It's the same stuff. So why is it so different? I don't understand it. I don't get it. And unfortunately they're playing a team with Justin Tucker and the best special teams in football. So, I mean, if you're looking for a way to go, how could the Packers blow this game in a game where you're either getting Tyler Huntley or a diminished version of Lamar Jackson? To me, the answer is that the special teams just pieced down their leg.
Yeah, and that's going to be the issue. And we've talked about, you know, the three losses that they've had, and it's, you look at the field goals and you think, what if, right? So if it's not the return game, if it's not those guys on special teams, it's the kicking unit. So it's, you know, last, you know, against the Bears, it was, you know, the return game and everything. Now it's like, okay, now do we have to worry about the field goal unit? And luckily, Mason Crosby has been doing his job. It's been good there for now. But I think it's not even one part of that operation. It's the entire special teams operation. That's kind of been their Achilles heel all year long. So again, when you're facing a team with Justin Tucker, I mean, you have to play your best football, because it could come down to a field goal and Ravens are going to win it.
If you're the offense and the defense, you're going, we can't make any mistakes because the margin is so small. And it makes sense for the Packers, a fitting metaphor that it's the Achilles heel in the kicking game. If it's going to be anything, it makes sense anatomically that it's the kicking game. So Lily, this is great. They're on a streak. They're the number one seed. You're our number one seed. Thank you so much for being here, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Peter.
All right. I want to thank Lily for joining the show. Great to talk to her. Today's episode is brought to you by our friends at Built Bar. Built Bar is the perfect stocking stuffer this holiday season. So many flavors, you can please everyone. Give them something delicious, something chocolatey, something decadent, but something that is also healthy, low in calories, low in sugar, low in net carbs, low in fat, but high in protein and high in fiber. Who wouldn't want to pull out their stocking? Cookies and cream. Pull out their stocking. Peanut butter brownie. They give you that extra fuel, that extra boost to continue to open presents, to continue to holiday shop. All options are on the table with Built Bar, a taste that you just will not believe until you have the opportunity to try it. People are passionate about their favorite flavor. I know I am. The coconut brownie is the best. There are so many options, and they're always coming up with new products, new ideas. They have puffs that are like marshmallowy, fluffy, delicious little treats. Unbelievable. Go try them. Go to built.com and use the promo code LOCK15 to get 15% off your order. That's built.com, promo code LOCK15 to get 15% off. And thanks to everyone who makes Locked On Packers their first listen of the day. Maybe you have a Built Bar when you do it. Built Bars make a good breakfast, I'm telling you. Thanks for, I love the tweets, everyone. Yeah, coffee and Locked On Packers. That's how I start my day. Hell yeah. Hell yeah. Let me know what kind of coffee we're doing. Are we doing lattes? Are you going to S-Bucks? Are you brewing it at home? Drip? Do you have the Chemex going? I want to hear about it. I want the details. I want to live vicariously through you, because I in the morning, I can't get fancy. I got a toddler. We got to just do the thing. We got to just get it going. And I still care about delicious coffee, but I am of the mind that all coffee is good coffee. There's no bad coffee. Bad coffee is good coffee. Coffee is good. That's the take. That's the tweet. We'll be back tomorrow. Crossover Thursday. We have Kevin Ostreicher from Locked On Ravens to break down an uncommon opponent. These, I think, are more important than the other ones, frankly, because we have less information. We're less used to them. We don't see them as much. We probably see them less often in market. So great opportunity to get the inside scoop on the Ravens. And then, of course, our happy hour on Friday. Follow me on Twitter, Peter_Bukowski. Follow the podcast on Twitter, Locked On Packers. Like us on Facebook. Subscribe to the podcast, iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts. Wherever you find podcasts, you will find Locked On Packers. And anytime you want to hit us up on the Locked On Packers fan hotline, you can do that 920-341-3775 to stay Locked On Packers.